The House Committee on Education will come to order. It is Wednesday, February 3rd, 1 p.m. If you could please turn off any BlackBerry, cell phones, pagers, and just as a reminder, turning it to vibrate isn't good enough. It interrupts the digital recording, and particularly with two of the hearings we have today, Oregon School for the Blind and Virtual Schools, I know there are people that are listening online and will be referencing the tape, so we want to make sure those folks have good access to a high-quality recording. For those of you that are at the dais, there was some issue in this hearing room earlier this morning with a buzz because laptops were touching the microphone. So if you could just make sure that there is no contact between your microphone and your laptop, that would be great. There is an overflow room in hearing room F. So if people continue coming in and there aren't enough seats, there is more room for people to be there and are watching in that room. And also, just as a note to people that are here for the first time seeing people with laptops up at the dais, just to be clear, we've moved to a paperless system, and so almost all of our materials are now on our laptops instead of in paper. So it's not that people are playing solitaire, they are actually looking at your amendments and looking at your bill, and that's why you'll see the laptops open. Are there any questions before we get going? Great. And the order we're going to go today, we're going to do the Mandarin Language Bill, and then virtual schools, and then School for the Blind. So I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3628, and I would invite up Representative Clem, and Senator Edwards, and Representative Bailey. Welcome to the Education Committee.
Thank you.
So thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative here, District 21 in Salem. These two gentlemen are chief co-sponsors of the bill, but it doesn't say it on the bill because of an error that I had in turning it in a little bit late. So that is why they're here. I will not talk much because I was here already. I just want to note that we actually have the president of our Fujian sister city association that Oregon has is in China right now already having conversations, and so the timeliness of this bill is really good because we believe getting it passed will actually mean potentially a far better bargaining position for the state of Oregon in attaining benefits from any kind of deal we can work out to have some instructors operate here. We know salary is likely to be waived for our instructors that come here. We may even be able to include things like health care waived and paid for by the other by the international nonprofit on the other side if we can get an agreement at a state level, which is the whole point of doing this bill. Right now it's being done district by district by district by district, and we want to try and do one for the whole state and save our school district's money, and I will stop at that point and leave it to my colleagues.
Thank you. And before you move on, Representative Clem, I think I noticed there were some amendments
here.
Which, if any, are your preferred?
The dash twos.
Okay.
And they were in working with the Department of Education to sort of broaden some of the language, mention some other partners we've done things like this with in the past, and just clarify a couple points on specifics with the organization that we're working with. But the dash twos.
Thank you, Representative Clem.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm a state senator in West Eugene, North Eugene, and Junction City. I'm here very much in support of the bill. I guess I'd touch on just very briefly why the bill is important. As you're probably aware, there are 1.4 billion people in the country of China. And it is one of the world's, if not the world's, fastest growing economy. And projections are that it will be larger than the U.S. economy by the year 2030. So, and of course, with the vast cultural differences between our country and their country, there is no doubt in my mind that given their status and rising status in the geopolitical climate, that the bilateral relationship between the U.S. and China will be one of the most, if not the most, important relationship in the world in coming decades. But yet, if you look around the state of Oregon, we've got a whole lot of language learning programs in Spanish and in French and in German and in Japanese and in Russian, but you would be hard-pressed to find a good Chinese or Mandarin learning program in your local community. And there are some, There are some, but there aren't that many. And so when you start talking with local school districts about, well, why don't you do this, I mean, the answers that I've gotten is that, well, I mean, we're essentially operating in a zero-sum budget situation, so that means we've got to cut one of these language programs over here if we're going to institute this one. And so we're trying to make it easier without mandating to local school districts, because we're not wanting to do that from the state level, what languages they should be teaching, but we are trying to provide some incentive by making it a little bit easier to sort of come up with a plug-and-play model that'll work for local districts to implement, and hence the bill. And we really think that a lot of the technical details should be worked out by the Department of Education, and so we're working cooperatively with them. And with that, I'll turn it over to Representative Bailey.
Thanks, Senator. Thank you, Chair Gelser. Members of the committee, for the record, Jules Bailey. I have the honor of representing House District 42 in Inner East Side, Portland. Just want to state very briefly that this bill really is an opportunity, a permissive bill, to build off of a successful relationship that already exists between schools in Oregon, colleges in Oregon, and the international nonprofit that Representative Clem mentioned. And I just wanted to describe for you briefly the experience that we had when we had an opportunity to have a bipartisan delegation with the Representative Maurer and a few others to visit this nonprofit in Beijing and have a chance to interact with them, talk with them about their programs, their standards, and really see the opportunity that we have to leverage what I think will be a very critical relationship to have with our counterparts on the other side of the pond there. So I'll stop there. I know you have a busy agenda, and appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Thank you all very much. Are there any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next we have Dave Porter and Victoria Yu.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I'll just remember.
Okay.
Okay. You want to give it to me?
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Gelser and members of the committee. I'm Dave Porter. I live in Southeast Portland, and I represent only myself. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go through my written testimony. There's a paragraph there on how important China is. I've written you all many times, so I think it's just a recurring theme, but it's a reality in the world today. I also, in a paragraph there, took a guess at how many, if you looked at the class that's graduating this spring, 2010, what we might be producing in the way of Mandarin proficiency coming out of that. I think I've been a little generous, and I come out with 1.34%, 470 students that might have had some Mandarin at all. The ones that are really would be able to function are maybe the 15 or 20 that started the immersion program 12 years ago and are coming out graduating this year. So we might have, of the 25 or 30 that started 13 years ago, we may have 15 or 20 that are coming out with a level sufficient that they could function in a Chinese university. With that, I'll thank you for your time. I'll take questions.
Thank you. Ms. Yu.
Well, Madam Chair and members of the committees, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. My name is Victoria Yu. I'm the Executive Director of Asian Education Foundation. The AEF was, I'm here today to in support of the House Bill 3628. AEF was founded in 2008 for the purpose of promoting the learning and understanding of Asian cultures and languages. The speakers before me have already emphasized the importance of Mandarin. Since 2001, states such as Utah have been enacting legislative measures to mandate the teaching of Mandarin in public schools. Nationwide, an estimated of 16,000 American public and private schools are teaching Chinese. This data is from the New York Times. So many of the schools have worked in partnerships with the nonprofit Chinese educational institutions. it is a position of AEF that bringing the teaching of Mandarin to Oregon K-12 public schools is the most sensible and far-reaching initiative the legislative could enact. We all know Mandarin is not only the most spoken language in the world by 1.12 billion people in three countries, but also is the most strategically important language to command, given the increasing economic and political power that China is rapidly amasses. That's all I have to say, and thank you again for the opportunity, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And is there anyone else today to be heard on House Bill 3628? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3628, and I will open a work session on House Bill 3628. Representative Springer, would you like to introduce the last two amendments?
Sure. Chair, I would move to adopt the dash two amendments. And maybe we can have just a little bit of a discussion about that.
Yes. Representative Springer has moved that we adopt the dash two amendments. Is there any discussion? Representative Kong.
Not that this session is moving quickly already, but can we have an overview of the dash two amendments?
Yes, Dana, could you give us an overview of the dash two amendments?
Certainly, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The dash twos do replace the original measure, but for the emergency clause, they add whereas clauses, which reference existing programs in the state for other languages other than Mandarin Chinese. And they authorize the superintendent to enter into agreement with another nation or that nation's public agency to ensure instruction of Mandarin Chinese is available to public school students by facilitating placement of teachers who speak Mandarin Chinese fluently. There is a minimum fiscal impact statement issued for this, which you've probably seen means that for the aggregate, it could cause a cost, but by itself it would not. It could be absorbed, and there's no revenue impact on the dash two amendments.
Thank you. Is there further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, is there objection to the adoption of the dash two amendment? Seeing none, the dash two amendments are adopted. Representative Springer.
Yes, I would move that House Bill 3628 as amended be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Springer moves House Bill 3628 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Maurer.
Well, my only comment, because I was involved with this in China, was that the amendment, the original language was only for China, and there was some concern about using China and that there may be other nations. So that was a major issue in this amendment. But I mean, this is permissive, and we already have one program in mind. It's established in the state of Oregon, and we want to expand it.
Any further, Representative Parker?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Along those lines, I had raised some concerns in, I think it was the whichever hearing we heard about this in maybe November, maybe January, that perhaps it was too restrictive. And I've had a few conversations and am comfortable now with where we are.
Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to sending House Bill 3628 to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, the motion passes. And I think we'll go ahead and have Representative Clem carry his bill. And with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 3628. And again, we're going out of order. We're waiting for some updated documents on the School for the Blind bill. So I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3660. And I was remiss when we opened up to welcome all of the children and students who are in the room. It is always a great addition to any day to have a bunch of bright young people to be part of the hearing, and I'm glad that you're here, and I hope that you will keep coming back for these hearings and other kinds of hearings, because this is your capital. So thank you very much to all the students who are here today and your parents for bringing you. Dana.
Oh, Madam Chair, this hasn't changed since we last saw it or the time before. But it does, I should note for the committee, have a subsequent refer of the Ways and Means.
Thank you. So I think what Dana is referencing is that this is a bill that Dana and I have heard it several times in several settings, and we did have a hearing in January. Could you give a brief overview, because I believe we have a number of people who are here that would...
Of course, Madam Chair. I forget that people have not been as intimately involved with this one as you and I have. The LC3660 is the work product of the Online Learning Task Force that was appointed at the end of last legislative session. And some of the big pieces of the measure before us are that the State Board of Education would be directed to develop a proposed governance model and to conduct reviews of funding and participation rates of students with special needs. The legislative committees, House Education and Senate Education General Government, would look at how should you divide the statutes on charter schools from the statutes on virtual public schools. There are some additional requirements related to budget and accounting systems so that the virtual schools and the charter schools and the other public schools is kind of apples to apples when you look at their expenditures. There's tracking of student progress, an additional qualification needed for administrators in virtual public schools, and an important element probably is the notification of when students come and go from virtual public schools. And there's an emergency clause that would be effective upon passage.
Thank you very much. And we have five people signed up to testify. First, I would invite up Rochelle Butcher and Julie Morrison. And Margaret Groves. Please, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Rochelle Butcher. This is my son, Edward. He's a student in the Oregon Virtual Academy. We're here today to address some things that just very recently came to my attention. For numerous reasons, in October, we chose to put, we call him Buddy, in Orba because we didn't feel there were any public school options available to us. My husband died in 2005. That was a pretty messy circumstance. We had to move from the rural area we lived in, the rural school he went to and had gone to, all his siblings had gone to. I have seven children, so I'm pretty familiar with the public school system. He had to go to a so-called new, better school in town, and when he went there, it wasn't a new, better school. He was subjected to what I see as reverse discrimination. He was a minority. There was a lot of bullying, gang violence. The final straw was when he had another student spit in his face. And I don't send my children to school to be unsafe. I got online and started doing some research on what my options as a parent were. And it was $589 a month to send him to a private school. As a widow with seven children, I don't have $589 to send one of my children to a private school, much less the five that are still in the primary grades. So Orva came to our attention, and I did some research, and I contacted other parents who had nothing but positive things to say about the experience. And we got Buddy signed up for that. He didn't start that until the first week of November. I was amazed at the quality of the work materials that he got. I was amazed at the quality of the work materials I got as his learning coach. They sent him a brand new computer. He is monitored daily. We sign on, and there is a list of his daily assignments that he is to fulfill that day, as well as a list of his weekly assignments. That was what made me feel so secure in this program, is that it is a monitored, structured school program. with 7 kids still in the home, 2 out of school but either going to college or working full-time, 5 in the primary grades, I wasn't sure if, as a parent, I was capable of monitoring his schooling. With the way that this program is structured, I am, because he also has safety nets in his instructors and in his mandatory contacts. He has excelled at this program. As a parent, I'm obligated, I am mandated to send him to school. That is the law. As a parent, I'm obligated, I am mandated to make proper choices for my child. I am mandated to make sure he has proper nutrition. I am mandated to ensure that he has clothing and food and a home and a safe environment. Now, why, as a parent, am I not allowed to make sure that for his 9th grade experience, that he is in a safe, wholesome, structured environment that ORVA can provide? Because now I'm back to where I was in October. I had no idea that I was not going to be allowed to send him to 9th grade at the virtual academy. Where we live, we love where we live. We live in Woodburn. Woodburn schools are not where I'm sending my child. My other children are in a charter school in Woodburn that I love. But unfortunately, because of the regulations, after 5th grade, I don't have options for my daughters. So that leaves my 8th grade son with this as an option this year. And realistically, at the rate that he's going, he could be done with his 8th grade school in April. And we could start his freshman year. But we can't. So as a parent, I've had all my choices about his education taken away. Because I can appeal to a different school district for him to go to next year and try to fit his transportation getting to and from there in my schedule, as well as all my other children. I can try to do that, but there's no guarantee that they're going to accept him. I'm not asking that he be allowed to start attending ORVA. I'm just asking that he be allowed, as well as the other 80 students that are 8th graders this year, be allowed to continue into 9th grade. We're not asking for the cap to be extended. We're just asking that those 80 students be allowed to attend high school. I know from my other children, Buddy has 4 siblings older than he is, that the 9th grade year is a huge stepping stone for their high school career. I don't know that if ORVA is available, that that is the option that Buddy will choose to take. But I want that option as his parent. And I feel I have that right, and I should have that right, to decide where he's going to go in 9th grade. This program has been a perfect fit for him, for our family. And the quality of education, the quality of materials, has exceeded all my expectations and anybody else's that has come in and observed what Edward's doing. And I would appreciate that consideration, not to raise the cap, but to allow those children that are already have found this as a fit to stay there. Public education is a solution, but it's not the solution for every child. It's a cookie cutter education. They have a model that they have to follow for every single child. My child doesn't fit in that model, and he should not have to try to conform to that. I should not have to subject him to being frustrated and irritated and not receiving the full benefit of an education that's being provided free of charge to me that I feel is better than any private school education that I researched.
Can I ask a question? You mentioned that Buddy enrolled at ORVA in the fall. Did, at the time that you enrolled, did they disclose to you that they are a K-8 school and have been for years and have never had the authorization to offer the 9th grade?
In all honesty, they gave me a lot of material that, with our lifestyle, I didn't review as well as I should have. They provided the information. Did they actively call me up and say, hey, by the way? No. But they did provide me with that information, and it was my failure with our lifestyle to have looked through all the information that they provided me. I do not blame them for my lack of knowledge. They provided the knowledge. I didn't choose to read it.
And I think I raised that just for a point of clarification. I know this is an issue that has come up in many areas, but there's nothing in this bill that takes away something that currently was there. ORVA has never had the ability to offer the ninth grade. They have the ability to apply for an extension of their waiver next year, in which case the ninth grade can be added. So this would be a new request to change the law to do something new. The challenge that we have isn't an issue of whether any particular child should be able to move to the ninth grade, but rather that there was a very large work group that worked and kind of put together a very fragile compromise in terms of a bill that we can move forward that protects all of the new enrollment that came to ORVA this year and allows the State Board of Education to offer waiver extensions earlier than they would have been under Senate Bill 767. And the challenge at the end of adding amendments that change it, it starts to break apart those coalitions and makes it very difficult to pass the bill all the way through the building, because everyone that was involved in this conversation, they all had things that they wanted to add where there wasn't agreement. And that's really the challenge that we have here today. But it's important. I just want to be very clear. This doesn't put a new restriction on eliminating ninth grade. That ninth grade has never been offered by ORVA, and hopefully it wasn't represented to you that was an option that was available when he enrolled in October.
No, when he enrolled in October, my focus was getting him caught up for what I felt that the public school had failed to provide him in that first 8 weeks of school. I wanted him on track to graduate eighth grade. That was my focus at that time. No one ever portrayed to me that they could go through 12th. Did I completely comprehend the scope of it until the last couple days? No, I didn't. But that's not their fault. What is at issue here is, okay, they can apply for that in a year or two. What's my child do from now until then? If he doesn't go to school, I'm breaking the law. If he does go to school at a substandard brick-and-mortar school, he's not receiving the full benefit and the full potential of what is available readily through ORVA. I mean, I'm seeing it. I'm living it. I'm experiencing it. He's 55% above his projected where he's supposed to be. 55% above in his math. His last two report cards, he was failing math. He went into ORVA, and he's 55% above the 27% that they project for him. That's huge. And as a parent, if I'm obligated to provide the things that are in his best interest, that should include his education.
Thank you very much.
My name is Julie Morrison. We're from Silverton, and three of my six children attend ORVA, Virtual Academy. I'd like to say, first off, I appreciate the work that the task force did. I was at the hearings last year when the idea of that was created. But I have to say, I am disappointed. I was under the impression at the time that there would be some parents involved in that task force to help give input, and I don't believe that there were. So, anyway, I would have liked to see more come from that, but I do appreciate those of you that are sympathetic to this cause. I would also like to clear up a little bit. I know virtual school can seem kind of out there, and I'd just like to give you a little glimpse of what it is like. I know some people are concerned, wouldn't want my children sitting in front of a screen all day. Anyway, they have enough of that with TV, movies, Facebook, whatever. On any given day, the kids will be checking in and out of their computers. We've purchased laptops, little mini nines, to make that easier for them. With the wireless connection, they can take their laptops anywhere. They'll check in, get their assignments, maybe print off a paper or two. They are also sent textbooks and science and art materials. As far as the education itself, it is well-rounded. It is hands-on. They have the freedom to, you know, be in their own home. They eat lunch with their dad when he comes home. You know, one might be out working on constructing an aqueduct or something with models or things that we have around the house. My seventh grade daughter was out recently. She was to write a paper about what she was listening to, and here she is surrounded by chickens and kittens and, you know, just out on the trampoline in the sun writing a paper. you know, there's so many things that we can do. The potential for virtual schooling is amazing. It's recent. It's progressive. To deny that it's going to be a part of Oregon's future would be like saying we don't really want computers in the schools at all. I see the potential for it. You know, I've given recommendations or ideas to even make it better. And it's sad that the people that are trying to make the school better spend so much time just fighting for the right to keep it going. I think that it's in Oregon's best interest to look at these ideas. I don't necessarily believe that more money is always the answer to our education problems in our schools. And I think sometimes you do need to think outside the box and look at all the different possibilities. My daughter, my oldest, is in eighth grade this year. And I know that you'd made a commitment to not kick children out of the schools. The CAPS were there to, I guess, keep too many children from participating in this, but that's exactly what will happen. At K-12, she won't have the option to re-enroll next year. And as a parent, you know, after watching her grow so much and learn how to manage her time, how to multitask, how to work with distractions, how to set goals for herself so that she can get her work done in a reasonable time and have more time available for other interests, volunteering, service projects, community involvement. For me to see her have to go backwards after all that progress and be forced to sit in a desk at a desk for 6 hours in front of a teacher and tell her that that's the only way you can learn now, I feel is demeaning. And I would like to see the bill amended to include ninth graders for next year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next, we have Margaret Groves, Morgan Allen, and Christina Martin. Ms. Groves, why don't you start?
Yeah, okay, yes. Thank Hi, I'm Margaret Groves, and I'm a parent and a learning coach for two children in Oregon Connections Academy. And I just want to be very brief. I just basically am just testifying as one of the potential casualties of the Senate Bill 767 passing last year. We were had enrolled in Orca after having made a conscious choice to move to this model from experiencing 9 years in the brick-and-mortar public schools, and thrilled to find the option was available, only to find after the bill went through its various machinations that we were in a lottery. And I wrote to you at the time, Representative Gelson, and you were very gracious to respond to me. And I think just to present the human face on the potential casualties of that passing, many parents had enrolled in this only to find that they were then potentially denied the option. In our case, it was quite devastating because we had not only made this choice for a very wide number of reasons for both my children, but we had actually even moved house out of our old school district, and you know, suggesting that we were in the school. So I think there are some very human casualties when these bills go through, and there are various things change during the process, and you've got families who are actually in the middle of being enrolled in a school, and they're making choices for their families, they're changing their living situation, they're changing the way they do things, and then suddenly it's almost snatched away from them at the last minute. So we were fortunate to be successful in the lottery. So I'm just here before you today to testify of the amazing experience we've had since enrolling, since being accepted into the school for this school year. And both my children are performing very, very well, beyond our expectations. I, as a learning coach, am able to work 30 hours a week in my job, which is, I have a lot of flexibility there, work mostly from home. And for my situation, it's a perfect solution to educational needs of my children, who had frankly been failed by the public schools until then. And I just want to say one more thing, which is that in all the regulations and so on that we're applying to the virtual schools, which are very valid regulations, and I think very, very necessary to protect children and the schools, but also that we virtual school parents would like to see those the same level of accountability apply to the bricks and mortar public schools, such as those from where we came, which were definitely, I would say, underperforming in many areas, and which was the reason for us to choose the virtual school model. So there are a number of children who are distinctly advantaged by this type of learning situation who would not do well in the public schools. And if the same level of accountability was applied to those schools and how they deal with those children's educational needs, I think we might see some forward progress in education in the state. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Ms. Martin.
Chair Gelser, representatives, my name is Christina Martin. I'm here on behalf of Cascade Policy Institute. Cascade is a strong advocate of increasing educational options for families. Some of you may already know that. You might remember us from last year. I believe that online education is one of those important options, but some parents have more options than others. Wealthy parents can choose an online education regardless of what you do here today. But ordinary parents are not so lucky. Their choice may rest on what you do here. Some can choose ORVA, while others can't because their district won't give them permission. They can choose ORCA, provided that it's not at its cap. But why should a parent here have to settle for anything but their first choice? I understand that you want to ensure that children in Oregon get a great education. Do that by empowering parents. Don't make them settle. You can empower parents by opening up their options. Let them choose what the best school is for their child. Let them choose ORCA or ORVA or one of the many other options. Make it easier for other schools even to come to the state. Obviously, this would require lifting the caps and removing the 50-50 rule. We also think that you should let parents choose schools whether or not they have licensed teachers. Just because a teacher doesn't have the proper licensure that you're requiring in this doesn't mean that they're not a good teacher. There's a lot of studies to prove that. There's a 2006 Harvard study that shows that very well. And I think that an experienced teacher shouldn't have to come here to Oregon and get our required licensure in order to be able to teach a class on an online learning program, especially when regular charter schools are only subjected to a 50-50 rule. Instead, why not simply encourage schools to be open about the qualifications of their teachers? You could even require that they post their experience online, and then you wouldn't have to make an arbitrary rule for licensure. You could just empower parents to make good decisions. Now, we agree that there's some very necessary portions of this bill, and so obviously those portions have to pass to protect current options, and we support those portions. But I would like to encourage you to pass a bill that would empower parents to find the best school for their kids and not to have to settle. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Allen.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen from the Department of Education, but wearing a slightly different hat today, actually here to convey a message from the State Board of Education. Didn't know I have the power to do that, but I do.
I never use that, but actually,
so I just brought a copy of a letter from the chair of the State Board of Education, Mr. Duncan Wise. The State Board had their regularly scheduled meeting last week and had a very rigorous debate about the LC at the time and now the House bill before you. And as you know, Nikki Squire, one of our state board members, was part of that and sort of gave an update to the entire board. And the board was enthusiastic about the work that the task force had done and is enthusiastic about the work that they would be asked to do if this bill passes. So just wanted to convey that the board is supportive of the legislation. And I know the bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And the board also in their letter mentions that they would like some staffing resources to be able to do this because of the amount of work that would need to be done in about a 6 month time period. And the board has had budget cuts, and they have now only one full-time staff member for the State Board of Education. So I'd be happy to answer any questions with that.
Thank you. Are there questions for any of the members of this diverse panel? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Morgan, what you're saying is the state board sponge is full.
Thank you, Representative Huffman.
In spite of his back.
Are there any further questions? Thank you very much. And we have next, Stephen Kafouri. And Mr. Kafouri is the last person I have on the list, so if you had intended to sign up and haven't been called up yet, let us know so we don't miss you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Stephen Kafouri representing Insight Schools of Oregon. Here we go again. I've been hung around this game, I don't know how many times, where the state legislature says, you know, this is really something that we got to have the experts at the Department of Education work out for us. Department of Education takes a look at it, and they say, you know, this is really a policy issue that the state legislature ought to work on, so let's give it back to them to do. This is number, I forget, number four or five. I have a suggestion. I've been around this building for a long time, and I've seen many contentious issues. And the way this legislature works best with contentious issues is to get the parties together in a room and say, would you please spend some time together in an informal setting, not with microphones and sitting in front of a dais, lay out your issues, compromise, negotiate, come back to us with when you have a solution. Now, some of us thought that might have been happened after the last session, because as I recall, in the last session, the last couple of days, when 767 passed, there was a statement saying, don't worry, this is just a timeout. We promise you, we're not putting this away, we're not going to kill the concept, we will have virtual schools here in the state of Oregon one of these days, but we just need a timeout for a chance to get together and work out some of the issues. During that interim, there was a 17-member task force, of which one person represented in schools, not my school and not Orva and not Orca, the major players in the game. One person representing the online schools, and no parents. And the structure of those organizations was like we have here. They heard testimony, and people came and they said, we'd like to have this done, and we'd like to have that done, and the task force went back and said, you know, we really don't have time because we're meeting in these formal structure things, and formal structure things take a long time to produce results. So they spent a lot of time working on definitions. Like, is biweekly mean twice a week, or does biweekly mean once a week? And after quite a long discussion of that, finally got a resolution, but didn't get down to the basic problem of how are we going to govern these programs. That issue is not going to come unless we have people sit together and work out a solution. You can bounce this back to the State Board of Education, and they'll work out something, and they'll bounce it back to you for the 2011 session. And I predict that that session they're going to say, you know, we nearly need more time. We don't have enough time to work. It's a complex issue. Never matter that many, many states have worked this out. The state of Washington has a program. They passed this with one or two negative votes in the legislature, both houses. The Washington Education Association was there supporting it all. It can happen. But it isn't going to happen if you put this to the State Board of Education. You guys work on it all by yourselves. And then come back to the legislature, and the legislature is going to do round and around in a circle until there's a determination by somebody in this building, because you guys have the final say, that you're going to put together a work group of the interested parties and say, we want to have a resolution. Many may... concepts around the state, around the United States, that are working right now, that we could put in short order. We don't have to start from the beginning and reinvent the wheel. Until that happens, we're going to be back again with you guys telling us back in 2011, well, we really didn't have time during then. We didn't have something we need to send back to the State Board of Education, and they'll send it back again to you. And we'll never get this off this program. These people are going to sit here and say, you know, this is my third kid or my fourth kid I'd like to have go to high school. And there'll be no room for them, no place for them.
Thank you, Mr. Kafouri. And I think I want to make a slight correction to your characterization of the makeup of the task force. Dana, could you clarify who was on the task force in charge of membership?
Well, Madam Chair, Senate Bill 767 required the task force to have a board member of a public charter school that offers online instruction. We did have a member of the Orava School Board, and then an administrator of a public charter school that offers online instruction. We did have the superintendent from the SIO School District. And then we also had a gentleman that worked with a Web Academy.
Thank you very much. And we did try very hard in the statute called for a board member from a virtual online public school. As we went through the board list, we already had someone from ORCA. We were trying to find someone from ORVA. There was only one person that was a parent, and my understanding is that they declined participation. And there just simply weren't parents that were on the boards. And that was the...
That was because the requirement, Madam Chair, was that the person be on the board. If you did, we got a lot of parents right here. You've had this room filled with parents over and over again all session. We're eager and willing and had the background and the desire and the time and the capability of serving on a committee. Anyway, my basic concept is not that the problem is with the number of people on the committee. You could have had it all parents. As long as it's set up in a structured formula and you don't have people sitting in a room together from both sides, or all three sides, or all four sides, you're not going to have a solution.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Kafouri. Are there any further questions for Mr. Kafouri? Thank you very much. Renee Kimball, please.
My name's Renee Kimball, and I appreciate the opportunity to sit here and have my say about this particular issue. We came here today, and I learned a fact today that I did not know before. Only 1% of the school children in the state do a virtual education. That's 1%. 1%. That means 99% don't do it. And I'd like you all to look at each other on the dais up there. Are 99% of you all wearing the same thing? Do you all have your hair the same way? If we allow diversity in every other part of our being, why not give the opportunity to these people to have children educated in the way they want the children educated and they feel is best for their children? Who knows their children better? You guys up there or the parents of those kids? We're talking, again, 1% of the kids going to school. We're not talking about 50%, 60%, 40%, 20%, 10%. We're talking about 1%. I'm asking you to have the courage within yourselves, and for this state, stand up. Let these kids learn. It's 1%. Take a chance. Let them have the opportunity to learn the way their own parents think is best for them. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we have one more, Kaylee Baxter. I think she's bringing her dad, Raleigh Baxter, with her, and a brother. And if you could start by stating your name for the record, please.
My name is Kaylee Baxter, and I'm in seventh grade in ORCA. I just wanted to say, being in a homeschool, why is it's important to me. My parents worked really hard to get me and three of my other siblings into ORCA because of what the public schools curriculum and things that were going on, the teaching levels, the student behaviors, what was happening. Now that we're in ORCA, I'm learning a lot more this year. Last year I was in seventh grade math, and my dad thought that it would be a good idea if I did it again. I'm learning way more than I did last year, new things that I didn't know existed in math. It's challenging me, and I can do it at my level. If it's too easy, I can communicate with teachers, and I can always ask questions to my learning coaches, and I can go at my level. I can reschedule if there's a day that I'm just not, things aren't going the way that I wanted them to. And I can fit other outside activities in while doing it.
Thank you very much. Thanks for coming today. Have you testified before legislative committee before? Well, you did a very good job. You should come back more often. You're like a pro. All right, we have one more person, and I'm going to ask that at this one we cut it off unless there's burning addition. We still have another bill to get to today. Allison Ackblit?
So you're asking that I don't?
No, I'm asking you to come up. And I'm just asking, I keep getting notes in the middle of each person. And if there's something critical, we'll take you, but if we can wrap it up, that would be great too.
I just want to go to one point that I haven't mentioned yet, or that I hasn't been mentioned yet.
Oh, can you start with your name?
Yes,
thank
Allison Ackblit.
Thanks.
I'm relatively new to Oregon. We've moved a lot from state to state. My husband works for Intel, and we move quite a bit. Since coming here, we had very bad experiences with our local school district. Both of my children have been on IEPs in the past and special education, and that's what I wanted to mention today. We're enrolled in ORCA, and what I really like is that I can have my students, if they need to be in gifted and talented classes, while getting special education in the subject that they need. And that's really powerful, because if they were in a brick-and-mortar school, which they both have been in the past, there would be a lot of stigma. And very often, a brick-and-mortar school, your child would have to be in a special education class all day. And with ORCA, they can be in special ed for only the classes they need it, and then they can be in gifted and talented for the classes that they qualify for. And that's extremely important.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Kopp.
Yes, not for this testimony, but can I make a couple comments? And I do have a question.
Yes.
I'd like to respond to Mr. Kafoury. I understand your concern about meetings that sometimes go around in circles. I had the privilege one evening to spend 2.5 hours discussing 7 words in a statement. And I assure you, I left very frustrated and thought, I'm never going back to that meeting again. But having said that, the question that I would have for the people that were on this work group, did the discussion come up about the really critical importance of the stage about a transition to from 8th grade to high school, and any, was that part of the discussion?
And Representative Dimbro can correct me as I try to piece together the process. This issue was formally raised by the lobbyist for ORVA to the co-chair of that, and I, the day before the last meeting of the work group when we had the final LC to approve, it was mentioned in a letter that we received from the Oregon Virtual Schools Association. I may have gotten the acronym wrong, but it's the coalition of all of the families together. That letter came along with dozens and dozens of other letters that raised a whole host of issues. One of the things that we did, we didn't have all of our meetings around this table with the microphones. We took people offline, and we went and broke up into small groups, so we had people representing kind of different perspectives on this issue. And Representative Huffman, too, can correct this. He was also on the work group as well. And we really did move to a more informal kind of a conversation where people talked about what were their goals, what were their fears. And what we tried to do at that time was outline what are the places where we can get agreement and consensus enough to move something forward in a short February session. What are the areas where we need to ask the State Board of Education for help? And what are the areas that we probably need to continue working on in the interim and come back and continue working on as a body in 2011? What you see in the bill before us today, which is 3660, are the pieces where we could get broad consensus. When we got into the pieces of whether it was changing caps or changing enrollment or addressing other issues, people had kind of sets of things that were important to them. My anticipation would be that because there are other parties that were interested in this, if we added an amendment to do that, I would expect we would see from another party an amendment to limit the age of students that were able to participate. We would probably see another amendment again about the language and materials to be available. And it gets to that part of what makes sense to one group of people as a little amendment is a big deal to someone else. And those are the things that didn't come in, because that is what would make it hard for us to move forward the pieces that we need.
And well, my comment, Chair, to everybody that served on that committee, first of all, thank you. It is tough to try to bring a range of people together to a common agreement, but also the only other comment I would make is a former high school teacher, high school administrator, middle school principal, the ninth grade, eighth grade, ninth grade is such an incredible, important transition for students. So I'd like to just say for the record, when the state board is looking at this, not only to investigate the online learning opportunities, but there are numerous opportunities through different districts, alternative schools, and those systems in place. The family that stated they were from Woodburn, I probably will ask our committee staff for the lady's address and say, did you contact so-and-so at our alternative school? Because there might be a way that they can work with you to make things fit. And so I would just ask that when the board information goes to the board, that those things would be definitely considered in the future.
I think one of the other pieces of information that's important to recall from our last meeting was that Gary Temple from SIA testified that ORCA is not operating at its cap, and there is still room in that virtual option as well. Neither school has hit the caps that were put in place by 767. Gary Temple, can you come up and talk to us a little bit about capacity and caps?
I'm sorry to get started on this.
It's okay.
This is yours.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gary Temple. I'm the superintendent of the South School District and the sponsor of, we sponsor ORCA. So, in as far as the question goes, is where we're at in our caps. When we met last time, which was a couple of weeks ago, we were actually 100 under our cap. Now, understand that that's not in every grade level. Okay? So there may be some that are close to their cap. My understanding in a meeting that I had on, I think it was Monday, is that we are pretty close to our cap now and that there is a waiting list for some grades, which is typically what we see. We see kind of two spikes in enrollment, one in about October, one in January, February each year. With that being said, there are a number of students who will leave ORCA at the end of the year because they're transitioning back to something else. So not in every case is it expected to be a K through 12 solution. It was traditionally developed to be a solution to bridge the gap between where they are and getting back into public education originally. But for some kids, this works and will work for their whole education. So,
thank you very much for that clarification. Representative Dimbro.
Yes, thanks, Gary. Just a follow-up to that. So does ORCA have latitude to offer students who are currently in eighth grade from ORVA a priority for filling those spots, or is that against the regs, the policy?
Okay, so this is my understanding of how the lottery would work. First, students who were enrolled last year would have the first slots. Actually, students who were enrolled May 1st of last year would have the first slots.
In ORCA. In your program.
In our program. Yes, thank you. What was that? Okay. I have a Bob, yes.
We'll get you the school calendar.
So as of last May 1st, those students that were enrolled have priority, and then their siblings. Then as far as the charter school law goes, students who were enrolled this year would have priority, so that'd be like slot 3, and then their siblings would be slot 4. I don't think there's anything in 767 that would allow us to provide moving them up in the selection process because they were in another online school. And I don't think there's anything in this law that would do that either. So I don't think we can get there from here, but I understand what your hope would be. I will tell you that in September. We did have quite a long waiting list in August, and by the time we got to September, the first day of September, we had worked through that, and everyone who wanted to be enrolled was enrolled. And then there was a lag before we started another waiting list. So.
Great. Thank you, Gary.
Yep.
Any other questions?
Good of you to do a drive-by there.
And before you disappear, Gary, I just have to take a moment to, I guess, number one, quite frankly, just brag on Gary a little bit. Superintendent in my district, everybody knows I live and love Sile. But you have worked incredibly hard on this and invested a lot of time, and I know there's been a lot of time that was invested that didn't take place in this committee and didn't take place on the task force also. And I just want to let you know I really appreciate that, and it's kind of nice to have you from Sile.
Oh, thank you. And someday I promise you, I won't feel like I'm at the Thanksgiving table for the first time when I come up here.
Thank you. So, do we have anybody else on the agenda, or are we going to recess for a moment?
Maybe.
Disregard.
Option C.
Our witness disappeared.
I sent him away.
You sent him away? All right. Are there further questions before we move on to the next part of the discussion? No. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3660 and open a work session on House Bill 3660. Representative Dimbrough.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3660 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Dimbrough moves House Bill 3660 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Huffman.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I was a member of the task force, and at the end when we were voting on predecessor of 3660, which was LC-15, on the record, I stated that there were 4 points that I objected to that I thought needed more attention. Some of those I thought probably would have been contentious. One or two others I didn't think were so contentious. Representatives from some organizations met me out in the hall and told me they were contentious and they would not support them. So I understand what the chair is talking about in trying to come up with a fix that meets the most needs. Ultimately, the best compromise. I stated those 4 things in this committee hearing a few weeks ago, so I'm not going to repeat those again. I know that Representative Dimbrough and others have lost sleep trying to figure out how to get me to a yes on this bill. And so I've come up with what I think is a reasonable compromise, because one of the things that, and I don't want to put words in the chair's mouth or rephrase something to fit my needs, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we've said a number of times that we want to make sure that the parents of virtual students understand that we work hard to find a home for them. During the task force hearings, we found out that ORVA could potentially, 8th grade graduation, could present some problems for those 8th graders. One of the recommendations that I made is that we add into the bill allowing strictly for those 8th graders coming out of ORVA to lift the cap on ORCA, Insight, and the others just for those ORVA students, so that none of them would be left out in the cold and or orphaned. I was pretty much assured that wasn't a problem. After Mr. Temple's testimony just now, I'm not as confident that that is not a problem. From month to month, it may or it may not be, from what I understood. So my simple, reasonable solution is in the -3 amendments for 3660. And in 3660, we allow quite a bit of latitude to the Board of Education. At the same time, we tie their hands in other areas. And one of the areas that Dash 3 unties the hands a bit is it simply allows the board...
And Dana's passing out the Dash 3 right now.
So
that you can have a visual aid to go with your description.
It simply allows the Board of Education the option or opportunity. It doesn't mandate. It doesn't direct. It simply allows the Board of Education to have a sit-down with ORVA and discuss the possibility of a waiver to allow them to institute the ninth grade. So that's it in a nutshell. It doesn't force anybody to do anything. It doesn't force the board's hand or anything, but it just allows the opportunity, which is not allowed in the bill. It allows them the opportunity to have the sit-down and the discussion.
And are you going to make a motion?
I would move, Madam Chair, that we adopt the Dash 3 amendments to HB 3660.
Thank you. Representative Pittman moves that we adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3660, which are now at your place. Is there any discussion?
Are we open for discussion?
Okay. Right. That's why I said, is there any discussion?
Well, I'm sorry. We were having this.
Is there any discussion? Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To whoever can answer this question, what is the number of students at ORVA leaving 8th grade?
There are 80 graduating 8th graders.
80. Thanks.
Not, and we're not suggesting that all 80 will want to go into ORVA's 9th grade if there were one available, or ORCA or anything else. We don't know, but we're assuming, based on past history, 50 to 60 out of the 80 would probably be looking for a home.
For further discussion, I would add, I think you did a good job of characterizing it. I think on its face, on its own, it is certainly a reasonable solution. The problem, again, is the context of a bill that has a lot of other things in it that are very important for a much larger number of students, and the instability that making changes to a very fragilely negotiated piece of legislation that's been brought forward to you, I just think we'll start to see amendments coming from other directions. If this was separate from this, if it was in its own vehicle, I would perhaps feel differently about it, but I think that the bigger piece of what is in House Bill 3660 is too important to risk this discussion moving forward. I think I would also feel differently about it. You mentioned the commitment to protecting students that were already enrolled, and it was kind of this idea of do no harm to kids that were enrolled when 767 passed last year. ORVA at that time was still a K-8 school. ORVA has never offered the ninth grade. So this is a request to do something new that did not exist before. And I think that what we have done in House Bill 3660 is change the conversation about virtual schools. I think the tenor of it is very different than it was last spring. I think that you have heard multiple statements from me included and from others recognizing that virtual schools are here to stay in Oregon. They are an important tool. Families should be able to access them. We don't want to reduce that opportunity. I think the impact of not adopting this is that things will continue as they are today with ORVA as a K-8 school, and a year from now when they go for their waiver extension, they would be able as part of that waiver process to negotiate to expand to a K-12. So again, I would feel differently about this if we were correcting a change that was made in 767. But ninth grade never existed in ORVA. This is asking for something new at a time when we did say that we were having that time out, and I think 3660 is moving it further forward. So I will be opposing the motion, but I appreciate the thoughtfulness you put into it, and it's not the content or the idea of ninth grade. I think that itself is fine.
And Madam Chair, just because I said it was a reasonable option, I didn't mean to make it sound like dissenting votes were unreasonable. I was merely suggesting a way that Representative Dimbro could begin sleeping at night, knowing that, and I don't know if I was thorough enough in my explanation that even though I had four solid points that I was opposed to the bill, if I got this approved, even though it's not technically one of the four, but it's close enough to one of them, I would become a yes vote on the bill and could probably bring another vote with me.
And we're going to continue moving through the discussion. When I looked this way towards Representative Harker, I also noticed the clock. We have another bill that we need to hear and move today. Representative Dembro, then Representative Maurer, then Representative Harker.
Well, I just want to thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say that I slept very well last night. Now, tonight, especially with the opportunity that Rep. Huffman just gave us, maybe I won't be sleeping so well. I agree with the Chair about the way that this amendment would disturb, disrupt, explode, whatever, a very fragile kind of compromise that we came up with. I do wish that this had come up earlier on in the process, and perhaps we could have addressed this. My hope is that the ebb and flow, the regular ebb and flow at ORCA will end up being able to accommodate these students so that they won't have a break in service in terms of their online education. It sounds as if there is some likelihood of that happening, and I do hope that it happens. Because, again, our purpose here is to deal with this, with the future of online education in a careful and really proactive way. And it's a very complex issue. Frankly, we're not going to really get things resolved until the end of the next full session. But I believe that we can do that, and we can do it in a way, to echo the Chair, that will allow students good access to online education, both students who are in charter schools and students who are in brick-and-mortar schools, so that we can give students the opportunity to, you know, all subject matters, irrespective of where they live in the state and which districts they live in. That's my goal, and I look forward to us getting there.
Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Listening to both your comments and then Representative Dembro's, I hope, in fact, that is the case. I think that going forward, the reality is that we are going to have to, I mean, we aren't going to embrace it because it's a novel idea. We're going to embrace it because it's the right idea, and we're going to have to do it because it's really one of the practical ideas. And so I wish we had gone further a little sooner, but I take it at face value that in fact these are sincere efforts to embrace it, because the higher education has embraced it, and it's time for K-12.
Thank you, Representative Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Maurer, for a great segue. We all have private lives, and in my private life, I have a business that provides online services to higher education around the country, primarily universities that do research. I have been extremely frustrated by this process and had hoped, like mad, as many of you know, to be a part of this task force because I have some expertise to bring to bear. Didn't work out that way. I am as frustrated as anybody out there for slightly different reasons, okay? But I also think you have a reasonable amendment. The only reason I can bring myself to oppose it now is I have been convinced by all or many players of the fragility of this thing, and I think that we will just grind to a halt if we don't vote and get this through in its unamended state. And we are not going to back away from, I give my word that if, for whatever, to whatever degree I can control things as they go forward, we're not going to back away from online education. It's not novel. It's essential to moving forward. All right? So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, let's go ahead and, Bonnie, would you call the roll on, and this is the dash three amendment.
Dash three?
Dash three amendment.
The amendment.
No.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative Kong?
No.
Representative Maurer?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
No.
Representative Thatcher?
Yes.
Representative Van Hedden?
No.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dembrow?
No.
Chair Gilson?
No. Having failed to receive the required votes, the motion fails. And so the motion that we still have on the table is House Bill 3660 to the floor with the DPAS recommendation. Is there any further discussion on that one? Representative Van Orman.
Yes, I have a comment. One of the issues, of course, overarching issues in this is what parents want for their children. And having been a person who had an educational program, we had an individual education plan for every child. But it was an expensive model. But it was a successful model. And I think that what we're hearing today is that parents want the opportunity to have an individual education plan for their child. The problem we have in Oregon is we don't have, we have funding for public education that gives us overcrowded classrooms, 4-day school weeks, and a shortened school year. And at some point in time, I'm hoping that we can reconcile this so that we have an education plan for all the kids.
Thank you. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess a couple things that I wanted to point out in this bill, I guess in the way of concerns and disagreements. This bill does many things, and I just want to highlight a couple of them that caused me a little concern. In Section 1, it talks about all superintendents, assistant superintendents, principals of the schools are licensed to administer by the teacher standard and TSPC. And we're now pulling out from charter school law pieces for virtual school because that's not necessarily consistent with charter schools, and we're starting to pull out some things that are making me uncomfortable, and I'm not going to stay there. I'm going to move on fairly quickly because I know that you have a full agenda. Also, this bill calls for the annual operating expenses and profit margin of the third-party entity for providing educational services to a public charter school in this state. And I realize this is a rhetorical question, but what other department, agency, or anything else in the state that does business with private vendors has that requirement on them? And our public schools don't have that requirement on them that I'm aware of. And I guess I understand the point there. It is, you know, are these private entities getting rich off of educating our kids? And we want to see their profit margins to see if they're doing that. If there's a private company that's selling goods or services and doing it well and is able to have a great profit margin, but we are getting services at a reasonable cost, and they're a good service, and our kids are getting educated, I'm okay with that. If we have a company that has a very poor profit margin, and we have an entity that's contracting for services for them, and the service is good, and the kid is getting educated, I'm okay with that too. I really am. It's not about the success of the student is not dependent on the profit margin of a company. Another point, I think probably the last one here that I want to bring out is in Section 9, it calls for, when we're talking about going back to the State Board of Education and them reporting back to us for the 11th session, and part of the standard, one of the things that we want them to look at is review the appropriate levels and methods of funding for virtual public schools, including virtual public charter schools. So I looked at that. I sat on a school board, public school board, for 5 years, chaired that board for 2 of those years. So I put myself in the shoes of this requirement, and I thought, okay, if somebody came to me and said, I need to review the appropriate levels and method of your funding, I'd say, you don't need to review anything. It's based on ADM or ADMW, average daily membership. It's a state formula. I'd say it's based on that. And what's the method of funding? That's the method. What's the level? It's based on that. That question's been answered. So when I see that there, I'm thinking, what's that really asking for? And I know that there's been a lot of discussion that onlines don't have the same level of heating bills and utilities and other things like that. But that question's been answered. So it causes me to ask, what are they really searching for in this question? And that concerns me, quite frankly. Now, all that to say, one of the things that this bill does, and one of the many reasons I voted no for Senate Bill 767, was the date of the established cap and how that impacted one particular school and lowered their enrollment drastically to the point kick kids out the door. Not they move out by attrition, but they go. This bill fixes that. And I like that part, of course. It's a shame that it has to fix it in the first place. So, what is very common in charter schools and certainly online charter schools is there's this perpetual sense of unrest that they're constantly dealing with. For good reason or not is really not for us to say. There is that perpetual sense of that. And I've got to tell you, my son attends a public school. It's by our choice. We like it. And by its very nature, it's the most vulnerable school in the school district because it's the smallest, it's outlying, and it's all those things you think about. And I've faced that very same question. What is next year? Is my son going to do 9 years at this school that I attended? It's important to us. So that is huge to me. This bill does, to some extent, address that, and I think without this bill, we have a much more volatile situation, quite frankly. I don't like this bill. I don't like this bill. Because it continues and perpetuates a conversation that does not need to be perpetuated in the sense that it has been perpetuated. That said, I'm very concerned about roughly, 300 kids that Senate Bill 767 from 09 impacts. And this bill does address that. This is my last statement. I know many people are, and Madam Chair, you worked very hard on this, and I have the utmost respect for you on this issue, for sure, and many issues. It's okay for us as a legislative body to get okay with online charter schools and charter schools in general. It's okay. And instead of having fragile legislation, and you've worked hard to get us legislation and to address this, instead of fragile legislation, we should just have legislation that allows parents to choose how to educate their kids. We need standards, of course. If my money, my tax dollars as much as yours are being spent, I want something for it, and I want kids educated, and I want accountability for my dollars. Just like public schools, just like charters, online charters, all that is the same. So I guess that's my soapbox, and I'm done.
Thank you, Representative Springer. Representative Thatcher.
Well, much of what Representative Springer said, I will not repeat, but I agree with everything she said so far. You gonna say more? No, no.
I really. You want me to say?
Yeah, you can go on. I just wanted to say that, you know, as the only parent of an actual virtual charter school student, I think in the legislature there might be people with grandparents and whatnot, but or grandchildren. But I really regret that we had passed the Senate Bill 767 last session, and there, like was pointed out, it does have this particular bill has a fix in there for one. What I'll call a bad part in there, but in light of the whole discussion, I really appreciated what former Representative Kapori was saying about we need to quit punting this back and forth and get everybody in the room and come to an agreement. It can be done. I think this particular bill, I think it passes. It gives the wrong message. Charter schools have been demonstrated champions in getting kids across the finish line, and 767 just kind of tied their shoelaces together and expecting them to still get across the finish line, and now maybe we're, you know, just leaving these shoelaces undone, but still it's there's a lot of tripping hazards out there, and I think that we need to get this fixed once and for all, and I really am not for perpetuating this discussion over and over again, like Representative Kapori was saying, we're just going to be punting this back and forth. I really want us to resolve this, be pro-virtual charter school, be pro-success for our students, be pro-parent choice for their kids. And this is a benefit to Oregon, and why it's being targeted, I'm not sure. But it has been shown to be a benefit to all the parents and all the children who participate. What was it, 1%? I mean, this isn't a lot of kids. I don't know, maybe there's a fear that maybe 2%, that'll double, or 3% are going to start participating in this. I'm not sure what the problem is, but I appreciate the work of the task force, and I don't want to dismiss the accomplishments that were had in trying to hash out this fragile agreement, but I still think we're setting up some tripping hazards for the virtual charter schools, and I hope that we can get that fixed soon.
Thank you very much. And with that, Bonnie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
This is on the bill.
On the bill, right?
On the bill.
Mm-hmm. Aye.
Representative Huffman?
No.
Representative Kalm?
Aye.
Representative Mallard?
Aye.
Representative Roblin?
Aye.
Representative Thatcher?
No.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Dimbrough?
Aye.
Chair Gelser?
Aye. Having received the required majority, the motion passes. As indicated before, this will go to the Ways and Means Committee because they will need some staff to get this report back to us by September 1st. Thank you all for coming today to participate in the hearing, and thank you to everyone on this committee and on the task force. I know that these conversations are not done, but I do think that the product of them is that it has become very clear that virtual schools are here to stay in Oregon, and I think we have put to rest the question of ending virtual schools. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 3660. What is the bill number?
3687.
Okay, and I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3687. Tina.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3687.
Can I ask that people keep the volume down as you walk out as we're moving into the next hearing? Thank you.
House Bill 3687 qualifies school districts for monies from the high-cost disabilities account based on the amounts that they have received from the Blind and Visually Impaired Student Fund. It requires DAS to consult with the Capital Planning Commission in developing the plan for sale of the Oregon School for the Blind property. And it requires the Department of Education to distribute the monies from the sale of the Oregon School for the Blind property to the Oregon School for the Deaf and to the fund. It declares an emergency, would take effect upon passage. It does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and there are two amendments. Would you like me to speak to either of those?
So we put in a couple of different amendments today. The last one, the one that you had two that were the same.
So that's an amendment. Dash twos would remove the requirement that DAS consult with the Capital Planning Commission in the sale of the property or developing the plan for the sale, but it would require DAS to present a plan for the sale at a meeting of the Capital Planning Commission, and that the Capital Planning Commission provide opportunity for public comment at that meeting. There are fiscal and revenue statements on both of those, although we got to distribute the fiscal statements to you, and we'll do that right now. Yes, and I'll let you proceed, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And this is identical to what you saw in January. It removed some redundant language around that high-cost disability grant. We did it twice. We only needed to do it once. And what we wanted to do, and this came at the request of Representative Berger, was to ensure there was some mechanism for the City of Salem to have a conversation about this change in land use. Apparently, the way we did that generated some concerns for the Department of Administrative Services, and we have found a different way to accomplish the same thing for about $600,000 less. So I would invite DAS up to explain that to us. Robin Hardstein, Scott Young, please. Harpster, sorry.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Robin Harpster. I'm the Administrator of Facilities for DAS. With me today is my Deputy Administrator, Scott Young. He's presented some testimony for you today. A little bit of background, why there were some concerns raised by DAS. The original bill language called for DAS to consult with the Capital Planning Commission to develop a plan for the disposition of sale for the School for the Blind. The concern that we raised was the mechanism as the language was written. The Capital Planning Commission, by statute, is an advisory group that speaks to how the land shall be used, the design elements of building components on a property for state land. This is actually a disposition, a real property transaction, which is governed by the Public Lands Advisory Committee, who has voted to unanimously approve the sale of this property in October of 2009. And so by creating language in this bill to have an advisory group that does not have authority over real property transactions caused some challenges in how we would plan. Because where we're at right now in our planning process is we were directed in the 09 session to develop a plan for sale that we're bringing to the full Ways and Means at the February 9th committee meeting. At that point, we'll be directed by the legislature to move forward with an option that they choose. And obviously, our desire is to have community involvement in that process, but in a way that is appropriate by statute with the Capital Planning Commission. We believe the language accomplishes that goal. Representative Berger has voiced that she's pleased with the language as I understand it today. And by the change, which is amendment number 2 or 3, which are identical, there will be minimal to no fiscal impact.
Thank you. And there's also just passed out to the dais a letter from the City of Salem who had requested that original language stating their support for the DAS 2. Anything further?
We'll be happy to answer any other questions you may have, Madam Chair.
Representative Huffman.
Just a question of you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Didn't I get included in the bill last session the verbiage that actually didn't ask for the disposition of the property, but the management and or decision making, which probably would have ultimately led to a sale, but we didn't want to force DAS to make a mid-recession sale. We wanted to make sure that if we had to hold on to the property for 2 years for maximum value. And maybe I'm killing a gnat with a howitzer here, I don't know, but I just some of the testimony, I just wanted to make sure to get on the record again that we did want to maximize the value.
Sure. Madam Chair, Representative Huffman, yes, our plan for options for disposal of the property bring into account the recession that we're in and the opportunities to maximize that value, whether it be a brownfield site where the buildings would be removed from the site, whether it's be sold as is. And there'll be a variety of different options that we will present to the legislature on February 9th, which will give them plenty of opportunity to choose what's the best course of action with our recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there further questions for this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tyler Smith.
Mr. Smith, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, and thank you, legislators. It's nice to come before you and state that I support this. I'm here representing as an attorney on behalf of my clients, a number of the Oregon School for the Blind Parents, and a number of former administrators of the Oregon School for the Blind.
Can you start by introducing your name? I stole your thunder by saying welcome.
Tyler Smith.
Thank you.
For the record. So I'm just going to get quickly to a few brief points on this, because we do support this. This is, I guess, as you mentioned on the last bill, a fix to what we thought was a bad bill, but these are two important fixes, and we hope everyone can gather around the table and support this amendment, or this, I guess, what would be the functional equivalent to an amendment to 2834. But as to the Oregon School for the Blind property, there's a long history of how this property came together. And it all came through charitable conveyances to accumulate to the larger piece of property that is now known as the Oregon School for the Blind grounds. It first happened in 1880. The Oregon legislature, the body then that you sit in, created a school called the Oregon School for the Education of the Deaf Mutes. By law, at that time, that body had its own capacity to take legal title to real property. Shortly thereafter, Henry Failing was appointed to the board of directors of the Oregon School for the Education of Deaf Mutes. Henry was a very influential person in Oregon politics at that time and a well-known benefactor. Among his many forms of public and charitable service, he served as mayor of Portland, president of the University of Oregon, trustee and treasurer of the Pacific University, president of the Portland Library Association, and treasurer of the Children's Home. In 1881, Henry Failing was on the board of directors for that school for the education of the deaf mutes. Henry himself personally donated lots 5 and 6 of Block 25 of the University Addition, and specifically at that time created a trust with the language in the deed that was outlined in the deed. The following year, in 1882, Henry Failing and that same board solicited another donation from another known benefactor, John H. Albert, to the Board of Trustees for the Deaf Mutes. That land was lots 3 and 4 of Block 25. The following year, in 1883, Asahel Bush donated all of Block 24 to the same Board of Directors. 2 years later, in 1885, Conrad Snowden gave Block 29, lots 5, 6, and 7, to the State of Oregon for the use of the Oregon School for the Blind. Coincidentally, that very building is where the Department of Administrative Services is currently located. So this does fix a very big problem. In 1899, after all of that land had been used by the Oregon School for the Blind for 5 years, those lots on Block 29 were exchanged for Block 23 by this very body, and still to be used for the Oregon School for the Blind. The Oregon School for the Blind used that property for nearly 110 years since that assignment and designee beneficiary. House Bill 2834 caused problems with this. ODE, who was likely the trustees to that trust, were placed in a position that they would have been forced to breach their obligations to the beneficiaries and violates the terms and conditions of that trust. So for those reasons, we hope that you can gather around, gain the support of your peers, and pass this bill to help those children. I thank you very much, and it's moving forward. I thank you for your efforts on this. I hope we can continue to work together. And as one sort of parting remark into the future, I hope that the blind and visually impaired community can take an active role. The superintendent currently has the power to do this, but to involve the experts in that community in the administration of the Blind and Visually Impaired Trust, which is not currently provided for by law. And thank you very much. I'm open to any questions.
Thank you very much. And just to clarify, you had mentioned solving a problem. I don't think you're proposing selling DAS.
No.
Some days, some people might support that idea.
It would give them away.
We can put it in the education.
I said nothing. All
right. Are there any questions for Mr. Smith? Seeing them. Thank you very much for coming, Mr. Smith. Morgan Allen, ODE.
Thank you, Chair Gelser, and members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Department of Education. Cindy Hunt and I were here a couple weeks ago sort of explaining the fixes in our view of this bill, and we just wanted to reiterate our support for the two fixes that will resolve litigation pending and relieve some of the financial stress on our local school districts by allowing them to access the Blind and Visually Impaired Fund for some of the funds that will be necessary to educate students as they transition back to their school districts that they cannot currently access. So I'd be happy to answer any questions and urge the committee support the bill with the amendments.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Allen? Wow, seeing none, thank you very much. Nobody has signed up in opposition to this bill. Just wanted to state that for the record. How refreshingly different. Representative Dimbro. Oh, I would like to close the public hearing on House Bill 3687 and open a work session on House Bill 3687.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments.
Representative Dimbro moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3687. Is there any discussion?
Representative Collins. Thank you, Chair Gelser. For clarification, the current bill and the amendments reflect more of the heart and voice of what this committee sent to Ways and Means last time, and yet Ways and Means presented a bill to both chambers on the floor that was different on the allocation of the funds. Is that a fair reflection of what happened?
Representative Comp, yes, I would characterize that the Ways and Means Committee substantially changed our intent in terms of the distribution of the sales.
Yeah. Comment?
Comment?
I fully plan on supporting this bill today as presented, but know that when it goes to Ways and Means, we'll work it once more.
Thank you.
Not knowing which way it's going to go.
Thank you. And just for the information of the committee, there have been discussions at this point with both of the co-chairs of the Ways and Means Committee about this bill. So hopefully it will have a smoother path this time around. Is there further discussion on this bill? Seeing none, Bonnie, would you? Oh, Representative Harker.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Only to state that I appreciate these discussions about the dollars involved here and my concern having been addressed or being addressed about what appeared to me to be a reduction of the Education Stability Fund. And so thank you for continuing those conversations.
You're welcome. Thank you all very much. Anyone else?
Are you ready for a motion?
Oh, are we going to? We have a motion, don't we? It's time for recess. yes, we have a motion on the table. Bonnie, would you please call the roll on the Dash 2 amendment? Is there any objection to the Dash 2 amendment? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. I do want to call the roll on the other. Is there further discussion on the bill as a whole? Seeing none, Bonnie, would you please call the roll on the bill?
Well, I didn't actually move the bill.
Oh, you didn't move the bill?
Yes, no motion.
Yes, you moved the bill. No.
Actually, I did.
You didn't? All right.
Oh.
Please don't.
Whatever it is, I vote on. You know me.
Do over.
Representative Parker and I were practicing.
Oh, yeah, it was a practice. Just a practice.
It was. We moved the Kleenex box.
That's right.
That was Representative Dimbro.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 3687 to the floor with a due House Bill 3687 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
With a do not change recommendation?
Representative Dimbro moves House Bill. Not House Bill 2834. Representative Dimbro moves House Bill 3687 to the floor with the due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means by prior reference.
As amended.
Is there any discussion? Besides Representative Huffman's request that it not be adjusted or changed. Seeing none. Bonnie, would you please call the roll?
Representative Parker?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Yes.
Representative
Kalm?
Aye.
Representative
Maurer? Aye. Representative Thatcher? Yes.
Representative Van Orman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Vice Chair Dimbro?
Aye.
Chair Gelser?
Aye. Having received the required votes, House Bill 3687
passes with a do-pass recommendation. Thank you, colleagues. I would point out that today we have heard bills about the country of China, virtual schools, and the Oregon School for the Blind, and we have 10 minutes left. On Friday, we take up religious dress in schools.
Do we have another bill?
It's a miracle.
We did.
That's it? We are going to hold over Representative Comp's bill until Friday.
Okay.
Unless, are there people here for Representative Comp's bill that can't come back on Friday or Monday, as it may work? You'll be back. All right. Thank you. With that, the House Committee on Education is adjourned.
I told him he won't have to come back.